Cash boxes have turned up in the shrine, but more of that later. I'm going to start by reviewing some formulations in which dana is a component, because it's not just one of the paramitas. And then I'm going to use the structure that Bhante gives in the Bodhisattva Ideal and relate some personal experiences in relation to dana. I'm ever grateful for Bhante's gift of clarity. So where does dana fit in? I mean, it's in quite a few formulations of the path and of descriptions of qualities that you want to develop. It's the first of the four Sangharavastus, the unifying factors of the Sangha. And actually, if you think about them, there's generosity, there's beneficial activity, there's kindly speech, and there's exemplification. They're actually all dana, because how can you give kindly speech if it's not a form of dana? And I mean, beneficial activity, I mean, what's that? But hoovering the carpets, you know. and exemplification is giving the Dharma. So they're just kind of subsets of dana. And the other one, the other very obvious one, is it's the second precept. After the first foundational precept, you know, don't do any harm, then the first sort of thing you hit is dana, is act with generosity, with... And as we're supposed to be talking about tonight, it is the first of the six paramitas. And the word paramita, this makes it a wee bit of a special case, means that which carries you to the further shore. And that's the aspect I want to kind of try and bring out. It's not just giving, it's giving in a way which is spiritually helpful to you. So I'd like to kind of stress that, hopefully I'll stress that a wee bit. However, I've been taking too many lessons from Paramit about when it comes to giving talks. I am going to digress. I found a bit in the Three Jewels about the 12 positive nidanas, the 12 positive links that lead from the wheel up the spiral to enlightenment. It's from the Nidana Vaga, which is in the Samyutta Nikaya. And I tried to look up the original and Access to Insight, but my luck ran out, you know, with that. So I've stuck with what I found in the Three Jewels. However, if you bear with me a few minutes with this, I think you'll find it will make dana makes a lot more sense. So the first positive nidana is dukkha and suffering, and we don't need to live very long to find out about that. It's just how life is, you know. No matter how pleasant it is, you know, along comes a wee bit of dukkha and spoils it all. And you don't have to be hanging around the GBC awful long to find out that the cause of dukkha is craving. And if you kind of get your head around a wee bit of the Dharma and you begin to kind of slacken off a bit in the craving department, you find that life just becomes that wee bit better, you know. And then you start to get a bit of confidence in this really works. And confidence... or faith in it, and that Buddhist word that's halfway between faith and confidence, Shraddha. So that begins to develop and it begins to strengthen, and it expresses itself as dana, generosity, and sila, the second perfection, as ethics. And that's certainly how I felt when I first came here, and I mean I still do feel like this. I learned enough to get a wee bit sorted, and that felt great. And I wanted to develop and protect what I was feeling, and, you know, get a bit more grounded. And wanting to help seemed like a very natural reaction to the gratitude that I was feeling for what I received. I thought it was just me. I thought it was just how I worked. You know, I'd found something really valuable. I wanted to help, you know. And I didn't sort of plan it that way, and I found that I started behaving more ethically, because the ethics felt like a sort of protection and the dana felt like a thank you, and it all just happened. I mean, I didn't plan it, it just was intuitive, instinctive, and I thought it was just my personality, it was just how I react. But it wasn't until much later, when I got around to reading the Three Jewels, that I discovered I was actually following a very well trodden path. So what's all this got to do with Dana Paramita? For me, the Dukkha Shraddha axis is the driving force behind Dana. As my faith in the Dharma increases, I want to support it. You know, I want to act with gratitude. I feel that I found something so valuable that I would go through hoops of fire for it, you know. And that expresses itself as Dana. I see Dana in its purest form as being like, you know, like a village square. You know, one of these really nice Italian village squares. There's lots of boulevards and streets and wee twisty lanes leading into it. So if you look on Dana and the sort of enlightenment aspect of Dana, being in the village square where giver and receiver are one and everything's no longer dual, we're on the outside. And giver and receiver are still two. You can go down some of the streets and you can interact with the receiver, whether it be a person or an institution. But you can't go down others. Either it's your own attitudes or something. You can give, but you're not in contact with the receiver. And that is what I think matters, is there's got to be an interaction between the giver and the receiver. There's a sort of gritty bit there that works. Whether it's an institution and it's a sense of ownership of that institution that you're giving to, or whether it's a person and you're in direct emotional contact with that person, that's where the working ground is, in my opinion. Anyway, to go back to ordinary Dana, and we'll get back to the list that Bhante gives. Traditionally, Dana is divided into four aspects: to whom the gift is given, what is given, how it is given, and why it is given. Now, so we start with the first one, to whom the gift is given. That's another list. It traditionally breaks down into friends and relatives, the poor, the sick, the afflicted, and the helpless, and those leading a full-time religious life. Now, I find it really interesting that friends and relatives are the top of that list, you know. I mean, I don't suppose my family are any more dysfunctional than anybody else's, but it's in the context of these close relationships, you know, with friends and relatives, that giving, I think, can definitely be most challenging. You know, it's far better to give to the beggar out there in Sucky Hall Street, you know, spare any change, Mrs. You know? And you throw him a few coins, he thanks you, and that's it, it's all over, and there's no further complications. I mean, you do something in relation to your family or close friends, you're never sure of your emotions, your motives are pure, you can get all grumpy if you don't think they've been grateful enough, and there's all sorts of shark-infested waters in there. And it's a real working ground, because that's really where it works, you know. So it's that's the two-way street. Where you're working with friends and relatives. Those leading a full-time religious life, this means monks and nuns, but this list is centuries old. I think in the context of the Sri Ratna community, we can take it as supporting our centres, our retreat centres, and the administrative structure of the Sri Ratna community. I think that's probably as good a reason as any. What is given? That's the next bit. Food, clothing and shelter, fearlessness, education and culture, life itself, merit and the Dharma. And in addition to these, I would like to look at it a slightly different way. I think all of these boil down to giving time and energy, old skills or just skills, and money. So I'm going to start by looking at the three, which is what really we actually give. If you look around the centre, you know, the carpets have been vacuumed, the toilets are clean, the computers work, programme leaflets just appear. I mean, I can only speak from my personal experience as a volunteer around here, but the centre team is like a nucleus around which the volunteers spin. And the centre creates an opportunity to put some energy out there, to break down the self and other barrier a wee bit, you know, and get yourself mentally beyond the sort of Christian conditioning. I can always sort of see people who do that, they get into a kind of thou shalt not mood mode. You know, I know it's not what the Bible says, and I know there's huge examples of people who don't, of Christians who don't act like this, but there's a lot who say, right, if I don't do this and I don't do that and I don't do the next thing, then I'll be fine, I'll go to heaven. And they just wall themselves up, you know. I won't covet my neighbour's ox, I won't talk to my neighbour, I won't help my neighbour, but I haven't done anything wrong, so I'll go to heaven. And I think the Buddhist approach, which is you've got to get out there and do something, is much less likely to be sort of perverted, and I think so. So anyway, the other one which I've separated out is giving old skills. Because those of you who know me well will know that I didn't come to the centre until I was in my 50s. I had had many, you know, more than half my life was passed by then, you know, even with the most hopeful estimate. and it was a pure accident. I discovered that when I started doing things which involved skills I'd learned in my working life, I just felt as if more of me was on board. So I think it's something that's really valuable in this general sort of going for refuge, and done it as a way of deepening your going for refuge. If you've got skills that you've learned, it just brings another bit of yourself on in line with the Dharma. And I found it was amazing. You know, strange to relate, cooking at Dana Kosha and being a chemist are scarily similar. and that was a big help to me. But I've done other things around the centre. I mean, the fact that I help Vidya Mai with the money, I'm roughly computer literate just about, and I'm fairly numerate. It wasn't money before, but I can count beyond 10. and that was a useful thing to be involved in, because numbers were my thing. Giving money is what we're going to reflect on once I'm finished talking. There's sometimes a tinge of embarrassment about money. You know, we don't like to brag about this, about it. You know, I mean, we all do it. We all standing orders. We put money in the dana bowl, but it's sort of clandestine dana. You know, you don't. It's all too easy not to make a practice of that. And this is the one way street. We're giving, but what's it? It's not helping us. It's not got the paramita bit attached. It's not helping us to get to the further shore. You know, we're on our eyes down our bank statement. You know, so. Electricity, council tax, television licence, Glasgow Various Centre, you know, and it's all too easy to forget. You know, put money in the dana bowl, that's it, it's gone, giving it away. You know, I think when we get to the end of this, we do a wee reflection on money. I think I'm going to try and sort of encourage you to see giving money as a practice. Anyway, back to the traditional list. The food, clothing and shelter are the first of the traditional ones. And most of the time this probably boils down to giving money, but sometimes it is literally food, clothing and shelter. I mean, I took in a stray cat and gave it home and a dog that would have been shot if I hadn't, you know. And my younger son has a habit of picking up waifs and strays of the human variety. I mean, the cat stayed for 14 years and two of the humans stayed for about a year, you know. And on reflection, there's a lot of real meaning of dana in that, because it's you build up relationships with these with people and with animals. You know. The cat could irritate you by bringing mice in the middle of the night, and the humans could irritate me by being noisy and untidy around my house. It's a real opportunity to give and to see how much good a little giving does. You don't need to go to great lengths. Just a wee bit of opening up and being helpful to folk could really turn people's lives around. And I'm quite sort of ashamed that I haven't done more of it, because it didn't take a lot to make a big difference. You know. But it's that, I think, which makes it worthwhile. You know, get close up and personal. Talk to the big issue man that you buy your copy of the big issue from. You know, get it down to a personal, and that makes it a two-way street. And the next one is fearlessness. My experience of that is, you know, helping with retreats at Dana Kosha, because Dana Kosha is a sort of safe space. And so giving fearlessness is really just giving a safe space where people can talk about things. I mean, it's mostly the psychic retreat I've been helping with in the last few years. And some people are quite afraid to talk about things like that. You know, they've come from a job. I went a member of the armed forces there recently, and, you know, Queen's regulations, soldiers are not allowed to be psychic. And, you know, it gave somebody a space where he could talk about these kind of things without feeling that anyone was going to judge him. And I think we weren't actually giving fearlessness. We were giving friendship, we were giving a listening ear, we were giving being non-judgmental about things. And the fearlessness evaporates. You can't, fearlessness is some, fear is somebody else's emotion. You can't take it out. But I think you can give a space which allows it to dissolve. It's really just you giving friendship, you know. Education, culture and life. I'm going to pass over these three because I really can't think of anything awfully relevant in my experience. There's plenty in the Jataka tales about the Buddha to be giving his life. And I'm sure we could unpick these, but I'm not going to do that tonight because it's not... Merit. Now, this is a kind of Theravadan idea that if you do good deeds, you accumulate merit. And I find the idea alternately quaint and offensive, quite honestly. You know, I just don't like it. But I think we all need to watch out for a kind of spiritual big-headedness that creeps in the back door. So it's probably quite good to look at the sort of merit thing and, you know, make sure you don't, you know, you give it away. You don't hang on to it. I really like Banti's quotes. I'm going to misquote Banti quoting Francis Bacon. Merit is like manure, the better for being spread. And the last of that list is the Dharma. And reading what Banti had to say about the formal teaching of the Dharma certainly made me think that I needed to up my game a wee bit in that department. I'm all too good at slipstreaming experienced teachers around here, and I think I need to kind of think about that one myself. So that's my lesson from tonight's talk. What I can talk about and what I feel in more secure ground with is walking the talk, you know, back to the kitchen at Dana Kosha. If I can keep grounded and keep open to people, they can see a bit of the Dharma in me. And that can be quite scary because you've got to be quite in yourself, quite sincere. And there's, you know, you really can't blag it at all. But if you can just hold that place and hold your own sort of conviction and groundedness, centeredness, I think you do get people coming in and saying some really quite astonishing things. You know, they've come there, they're not Buddhists, they've never met a Buddhist in their life, and they just see that there's another way of being. And, you know, they go home, there's a door opened and it'll never close again. It might sort of swing to a bit because they'll get back out in the big wide world, but it's amazing how much how we are with other people who are not Buddhists is giving the Dharma. I never underestimate that. And it was I can look back to my own first inspiration when I came in here and I wasn't a Buddhist. My first inspiration was Kalyanavacha, the woman who taught me to meditate. She was the first practicing Buddhist I'd ever seen, you know. And I saw the Dharma in action and I wanted to be like her. And we're back to where I started, we're back at the four Samgaravastas, we're back at exemplification. And there's many others who have followed and still follow, you know, that. And I think it's one of the best ways of seeing or giving the Dharma. I watch someone more experienced than me dealing with a sticky situation and I see a deeper level of the Dharma. I see someone who can be more kinder and more compassionate, less judgmental than me. And I think that inspires me to try a bit harder. How is the gift given? Is the next heading. Courteously, happily and promptly. And I don't really think I need to go into this one either. I mean, if you don't give the gift with a sort of positive mental state, you're going to get nowhere fast. So it's got to be given with that, with a generous heart, which is basically what that's saying. Why is the gift given? For the sake of all sentient beings. Now, a story from my distant, murky and political past springs to mind here. Once upon a time, we'll start the story properly, you know. I stood for the council, you know. I was an incomer to Lark Hall. It's a long time ago. I was a young whippersnapper of about 32. And my opponent was a long-standing councillor who worked incredibly hard for the community. But she worked for the greater glory of herself, or so it seemed anyway, and she was roundly disliked for it, you know. So as polling day wore on and it became apparent that it was going to be a close-run thing, when you're really in politics, you know, kind of full-time, you develop antennae, and you don't really need to count the votes. You've got a pretty good idea whether you're getting ploughed or whether you're making a decent showing of things, you know. So her antennae and my antennae were telling us the same thing. This is tight. So as I say, the antennae began to operate. So we went from 11 o'clock in the morning, she was patronising me and telling me she thought my husband was a troublemaker. Probably true, but it wasn't just the most tactful thing to say, you know. By 6 o'clock in the evening, she was inviting me into her little sanctum for tea and biscuits. And by 1 a.m. the next morning, when she retained her seat, we were back to being patronised again. Gone full circle, you know. I mean, it's okay, now as a Buddhist I can see that it was her ego that was causing all the problem, you know. But I also saw how painful it would have been if she'd lost that seat. It would have been a deep, deep hurt for her, you know. It's just how she was giving, and yet she gave so much to the community. She literally worked herself morning, noon and night, you know, doing things, arranging things, lunch clubs for old people, this, that and the next thing. So I think we've got to keep that, that's where we're working, we've got to keep that in mind, that we've got to keep the watch that there's a potential for ego there and we reduce it, you know. I don't think any of us here are on ego max, you know. That we're not free of ego and we're not enlightened, and we've got to keep that potential in mind that Dana can reduce the ego, and it's a good working ground for the spiritual path. And I think it's that grit between the close-up and personal with the recipient, whether it's a person or an institution like this place, that helps to erode ego. And this is where the paramita bit comes in. We'll get back round to that. We want to be in a position which will convey us to the other shore, and therefore we've got to give in a way that puts us in that spiritual place. And Bhante, so we'll finish off with another quote from Bhante: "Dana paramita is the practice of giving, conjoined with the experience of reality." Mm-hmm.